Anyway, for some strange reason, I was thinking about this as I watched Annabeth straighten up. She closed her laptop, which had been given to her as a gift from the inventor Daedalus last summer. I cleared my throat. "So, get any good info from that thing?" "Too much," she said. "Daedalus had so many ideas, I could spend 50 years just trying to figure them all out." "Yeah," I muttered. "That would be fun." She shuffled her papers, mostly drawings of buildings and a bunch of handwritten notes. I knew she wanted to be an architect someday, but I'd learned the hard way not to ask what she was working on. She'd start talking about angles and load-bearing joints until my eyes glazed over. "You know," she brushed her hair behind her ear, like she does when she's nervous, "this whole thing with Beckendorf and Selena, it kind of makes you think about what's important, about losing people who are important." I nodded. My brain started seizing on little random details, like the fact that she was still wearing those silver owl earrings from her dad, who was this brainiac military history professor in San Francisco. "Yeah," I stammered. "Like, is everything cool with your family?" Okay, really stupid question, but hey, I was nervous. Annabeth looked disappointed, but she nodded. "My dad wanted to take me to Greece this summer," she said wistfully. "I've always wanted to see the Parthenon," I remembered. She managed to smile. "Yeah, that's okay. There'll be other summers, right?" As soon as I said it, I realized it was a boneheaded comment. I was facing the end of my days. Within a week, Olympus might fall. If the age of the gods really did end, the world as we knew it would dissolve into chaos. Demigods would be hunted to extinction. There would be no more summers for us. Annabeth stared at her inspection scroll. 3 out of 5, she muttered. "For a sloppy head counselor. Come on, let's finish your reports and get back to Chiron." On the way to the big house, we read the last report, which was handwritten on a maple leaf from a satyr in Canada. If possible, the note made me feel even worse. "Dear Grover," I read aloud, "woods outside Toronto attacked by giant evil badger. Try to do as you suggested and summon power of Pan. No effect. Many naiads trees destroyed. Retreating to Ottawa. Please advise. Where are you? Gleason Hedge, Protector." Annabeth grimaced. "You haven't heard anything from him? Even with your empathy link?" I shook my head dejectedly. Ever since last summer when the god Pan had died, our friend Grover had been drifting farther and farther away. The Council of Cloven Elders treated him like an outcast, but Grover still traveled all over the East Coast, trying to spread the word about Pan and convince nature spirits to protect their own little bits of the wild. He'd only come back to camp a few times to see his girlfriend Juniper. Last I'd heard, he was in Central Park organizing the Dryads, but nobody had seen or heard from him in 2 months. We tried to send Iris messages. They never got through. I had an empathy link with Grover, so I hoped I would know if anything bad happened to him. Grover had told me one time that if he died, the empathy link might kill me too. But I wasn't sure if that was still true or not. I wondered if he was still in Manhattan. Then I thought about my dream of Rachel's sketch. Dark clouds closing on the city. An army gathered around the Empire State Building. "Annabeth." I stopped her by the tetherball court. I knew I was asking for trouble, but I didn't know who else to trust. Plus, I'd always depended on Annabeth for advice. "Listen, I had this dream about, Rachel." I told her the whole thing, even the weird picture of Luke as a child. For a while, she didn't say anything. Then she rolled up her inspection scroll so tight she ripped it. "What do you want me to say?" I'm not sure. You're the best strategist I know. If you were Kronos planning this war, what would you do next? I'd use Typhon as a distraction, then I'd hit Olympus directly while the gods were in the west. Just like in Rachel's picture. Percy, she said, her voice tight, Rachel is just immortal. But what if her dream is true? Those other Titans, they said Olympus would be destroyed in a matter of days. They said they had plenty of other challenges, and what's with that picture of Luke as a kid? We'll just have to be ready. How? I said. Look at our camp. We can't even stop fighting each other, and I'm supposed to get my stupid soul reaped. She threw down her scroll. I knew we shouldn't have shown you the prophecy. Her voice was angry and hurt. All it did was scare you. You run away from things when you're scared. I stared at her, completely stunned. Me? Run away? She got right in my face. Yes, you. You're a coward, Percy Jackson. We were nose to nose. Her eyes were red, and I suddenly realized that when she called me a coward, maybe she wasn't talking about the prophecy. If you don't like our chances, she said, maybe you should go on that vacation with Rachel. Annabeth, if you don't like our company, that's not fair. She pushed past me and stormed toward the strawberry fields. She hit the tetherball as she passed and sent it spinning angrily around the pole. I'd like to say my day got better from there. Of course it didn't. That afternoon, we had an assembly at the campfire to burn Beckendorf's burial shroud and say our goodbyes. Even the Ares and Apollo cabins called a temporary truce to attend. Beckendorf's shroud was made out of metal links, like chainmail. I didn't see how it would burn, but the fates must have been helping out. The metal melted in the fire and turned to golden smoke, which rose into the sky. The campfire flames always reflected the campers' moods, and today they burned black. I hoped Beckendorf's spirit would end up in Elysium. Maybe he'd even choose to be reborn and try for Elysium in three different lifetimes so he could reach the Isles of the Blessed, which was like the underworld's ultimate party headquarters. If anyone deserved it, Beckendorf did. Annabeth left without a word to me. Most of the other campers drifted off to their afternoon activities. I just stood there staring at the dying fire. Selena sat nearby crying, while Clarice and her boyfriend, Chris Rodriguez, tried to comfort her. Finally, I got up the nerve to walk over. Hey, Selena, I'm really sorry. She sniffled. Clarice glared at me, but she always glares at everyone. Chris would barely look at me. He'd been one of Luke's men until Clarice rescued him from the labyrinth last summer, and I guess he still felt guilty about it. I cleared my throat. Selena, you know Beckendorf carried your picture. He looked at it right before we went into battle. You meant a lot to him. You made the last year the best of his life. Selena sobbed. Good work, Percy, Clarice muttered. No, it's all right, Selena said. Thank you, Percy. I should go. You want company? Clarice asked. Selena shook her head and ran off. She's stronger than she looks, Clarice muttered, almost to herself. She'll survive. You could help with that, I suggested. You could honor Beckendorf's memory by fighting with us. Clarice went for her knife, but it wasn't there anymore. She'd thrown it on the ping-pong table in the big house. Not my problem, she growled. My cabin doesn't get honor. I don't fight. I noticed she wasn't speaking in rhymes. Maybe she hadn't been around when her cabin mates got cursed, or maybe she had a way of breaking the spell. With a chill, I wondered if Clarice could be Kronos' spy at camp. Was that why she was keeping her cabin out of the fight? But as much as I disliked Clarice, spying for the Titans didn't seem like her style. All right, I told her. I didn't want to bring this up, but you owe me one. You'd be rotting in a Cyclops' cave in the Sea of Monsters if it wasn't for me. She clenched her jaw. Any other favor, Percy, not this. The Ares cabin has been dissed too many times, and don't think I don't know what people say about me behind my back. I wanted to say, well, it's true, but I bit my tongue. So, what, you're just gonna let Kronos crush us? I asked. If you want my help so bad, tell Apollo to give us the chariot. You're such a big baby. She charged me, but Chris got between us.
Whoa, guys, he said. Clarice, you know, maybe he's got a point.
She sneered at him. Not you too. She trudged off with Chris at her heels. Hey, wait, I just meant... Clarice, wait. I watched the last sparks from Beckendorf's fire curl into the afternoon sky. Then I headed toward the sword-fighting arena. I needed a break, and I wanted to see an old friend. Chapter 5. I drive my dog into a tree. Mrs. O'Leary saw me before I saw her, which was a pretty good trick considering she's the size of a garbage truck. I walked into the arena, and a wall of darkness slammed into me.
Oof!
The next thing I knew, I was flat on the ground with a huge paw on my chest and an oversized Brillo pad tongue licking my face. Ow! I said. Hey, girl, good to see you too. Ow! It took a few minutes for Mrs. O'Leary to calm down and get off me. By then, I was pretty much drenched in dog drool. She wanted to play fetch, so I picked up a bronze shield and tossed it across the arena. By the way, Mrs. O'Leary is the world's only friendly hellhound. I kind of inherited her when her previous owner died. She lived at camp, but Beckendorf used to take care of her whenever I was gone. He had smelted Mrs. O'Leary's favorite bronze chewing bone. He'd forged her collar with a little smiley face and a crossbones name tag. Next to me, Beckendorf had been her best friend. Thinking about that made me sad all over again. But I threw the shield a few more times because Mrs. O'Leary insisted. Soon she started barking, a sound slightly louder than an artillery gun, like she needed to go for a walk. The other campers didn't think it was funny when she went to the bathroom in the arena. It had caused more than one unfortunate slip and slide accident, so I opened the gates of the arena and she bounded straight toward the woods. I jogged after her, not too concerned that she was getting ahead. Nothing in the woods can threaten Mrs. O'Leary. Even the dragons and giant scorpions ran away when she came close. When I finally tracked her down, she wasn't using the facilities. She was in a familiar clearing where the Council of Cloven Elders had once put Grover on trial. The place didn't look so good. The grass had turned yellow. The three topiary thrones had lost all their leaves. But that's not what surprised me. In the middle of the glade stood the weirdest trio I'd ever seen. Juniper the tree nymph, Nico D'Angelo, and a very old, very fat satyr. Nico was the only one who didn't seem freaked out by Mrs. O'Leary's appearance. He looked pretty much like I'd seen him in my dream. An aviator's jacket, black jeans, and a t-shirt with dancing skeletons on it, like one of those Day of the Dead pictures. His Stygian iron sword hung at his side. He was only 12, but he looked much older and sadder. He nodded when he saw me. Then he went back to scratching Mrs. O'Leary's ears. She sniffed his legs like he was the most interesting thing since ribeye steaks. Being the son of Hades, he'd probably been traveling in all sorts of hellhound-friendly places. The old satyr didn't look nearly so happy.
Will someone, what is this underworld creature doing in my forest?
He waved his arms and trotted on his hooves as if the grass were hot.
You there, Percy Jackson, is this your beast?
Sorry, Linnaeus, I said. That's your name, right? The satyr rolled his eyes. His fur was dust bunny gray, and a spider web grew between his horns. His belly would have made him an invincible bumper car.
"Well, of course I'm Linnaeus. Don't tell me you've forgotten a member of the council so quickly. Now call off your beast."
"Woof,"
Mrs. O'Leary said happily. The old satyr gulped.
"Make it go away. Juniper, I will not help you under these circumstances."
Juniper turned toward me. She was pretty in a dryad-y way, with her purple gossamer dress and her elfish face, but her eyes were green-tinted with chlorophyll from crying.
"Percy," she sniffled, "I was just asking about Grover. I know something's happened. He wouldn't stay gone this long if he wasn't in trouble. I was hoping that Linnaeus..."
"I told you," the satyr protested. "You are better off without that traitor."
Juniper stamped her foot.
"He's not a traitor. He's the bravest satyr ever, and I want to know where he is."
"Woof!"
Linnaeus's knees started knocking.
I won't answer questions with this hellhound sniffing my tail."
Nico looked like he was trying not to crack up.
"I'll walk the dog,"
he volunteered. He whistled, and Mrs. O'Leary bounded after him to the far end of the grove. Linnaeus huffed indignantly and brushed the twigs off his shirt.
"Now, as I was trying to explain, young lady, your boyfriend has not sent any reports since we voted him into exile."
"You tried to vote him into exile," I corrected. "Chiron and Dionysus stopped you."
"Bah! They are honorary council members. It wasn't a proper vote."
"I'll tell Dionysus you said that." Linnaeus paled.
"I only meant... Now, see here, Jackson, this is none of your business."
"Grover's my friend," I said. "He wasn't lying to you about Pan's death. I saw it myself. You were just too scared to accept the truth." Linnaeus's lips quivered.
"No, Grover's a liar, and good riddance. We're better off without him."
I pointed at the withered thrones. "If things are going so well, where are your friends? Looks like your council hasn't been meeting lately."
"Marin and Salinas. I'm sure they'll be back," he said, but I could hear the panic in his voice. "They're just taking some time off to think. It's been a very unsettling year."
"It's going to get a lot more unsettling," I promised. "Linnaeus, we need Grover. There's got to be a way you can find him with your magic." The old satyr's eye twitched.
"I'm telling you, I've heard nothing. Perhaps he's dead."
Juniper choked back a sob. "He's not dead," I said. "I can feel that much."
"Empathy links," Linnaeus said disdainfully. "Very unreliable."
"So ask around," I insisted. "Find him. There's a war coming. Grover was preparing the nature's spirits."
"Without my permission. And it's not our war."
I grabbed him by the shirt, which seriously wasn't like me, but the stupid old goat was making me mad. "Listen, Linnaeus, when Kronos attacks, he's going to have packs of hellhounds. He's going to destroy everything in his path. Mortals, gods, demigods. Do you think he'll let the satyrs go free? You're supposed to be a leader, so lead. Get out there and see what's happening. Find Grover and bring Juniper some news. Now, go!" I didn't push him very hard, but he was kind of top-heavy. He fell on his furry rump, then scrambled to his hooves and ran away with his belly jiggling.
"Grover will never be accepted. He will die an outcast."
When he disappeared into the bushes, Juniper wiped her eyes.
"I'm sorry, Percy. I didn't mean to get you involved. Linnaeus is still a lord of the wild. You don't want to make an enemy of him."
"No problem," I said. "I've got worse enemies than overweight satyrs." Nico walked back to us.
"Good job, Percy,"
Judging from the trail of goat pellets, I'd say you shook him up pretty well. I was afraid I knew why Nico was here, but I tried for a smile.
Welcome back. Did you come by just to see Juniper?
He blushed. No, that was an accident. I kind of dropped into the middle of their conversation.
He scared us to death, Juniper said, right out of the shadows. But Nico, you are the son of Hades and all. Are you sure you haven't heard anything about Grover?
Nico shifted his weight. Juniper, like I tried to tell you, even if Grover died, he would reincarnate into something else in nature. I can't sense things like that, only mortal souls.
But if you do hear anything, she pleaded, putting her hand on his arm, anything at all?
Nico's cheeks got even brighter red. You bet. I'll keep my ears open.
We'll find him, Juniper, I promised. Grover's alive, I'm sure. There must be a simple reason why he hasn't contacted us.
She nodded glumly.
I hate not being able to leave the forest. He could be anywhere, and I'm stuck here waiting. Oh, if that silly goat has gotten himself hurt...
Mrs. O'Leary bounded back over and took an interest in Juniper's dress. Juniper yelped.
Oh, no, you don't. I know about dogs and trees. I'm gone.
She went poof into green mist. Mrs. O'Leary looked disappointed, but she lumbered off to find another target, leaving Nico and me alone. Nico tapped his sword on the ground. A tiny mound of animal bones erupted from the dirt. They knit themselves together into a skeletal field mouse and scampered off.
I was sorry to hear about Beckendorf.
A lump formed in my throat.
How did you...
I talked to his ghost.
Oh, right. I never get used to the fact that this 12-year-old kid spent more time talking with the dead than the living.
Did he say anything?
He doesn't blame you. He figured you'd be beating yourself up, and he said you shouldn't.
Is he going to try for rebirth?
Nico shook his head.
He's staying in Elysium. Said he's waiting for someone. Not sure what he meant, but he seems okay with death.
It wasn't much comfort, but it was something.
I had a vision you were on Mount Tam, I told Nico. Was that...
real? He said, I didn't mean to be spying on the Titans, but I was in the neighborhood.
Doing what?
Nico tugged at his sword belt.
Following a lead on, you know, my family.
I nodded. I knew his past was a painful subject. Until 2 years ago, he and his sister Bianca had been frozen in time at a place called the Lotus Hotel and Casino. They'd been there for like 70 years. Eventually, a mysterious lawyer rescued them and checked them into a boarding school, but Nico had no memories of his life before the casino. He didn't know anything about his mother, he didn't know who the lawyer was, or why they'd been frozen in time or allowed to go free. After Bianca died and left Nico alone, he'd been obsessed with finding answers.
So, how did it go? I asked. Any luck?
No, he murmured, but I may have a new lead soon.
What's the lead?
Nico chewed his lip.
That's not important right now. You know why I'm here.
A feeling of dread started to build in my chest. Ever since Nico first proposed his plan for beating Kronos last summer, I'd had nightmares about it. He would show up occasionally and press me for an answer, but I kept putting him off.
Nico, I don't know, I said. It seems pretty extreme.
You've got Typhon coming in, what, a week? Most of the other Titans are on leash now and on Kronos' side. Maybe it's time to think extreme.
I looked back toward the camp. Even from this distance, I could hear the Ares and Apollo campers fighting again, yelling curses and spouting bad poetry.
They're no match for the Titan army, Nico said. You know that.
This comes down to you and Luke, and there's only one way you can beat Luke. I remembered the fight on the Princess Andromeda. I'd been hopelessly outmatched. Kronos had almost killed me with a single cut to my arm, and I couldn't even wound him. Riptide had glanced right off his skin. "We can give you the same power," Nico urged. "You heard the great prophecy. Unless you want to have your soul reaped by a cursed blade." I wondered how Nico had heard the prophecy. Probably from some ghost. "You can't prevent a prophecy," I said, "but you can fight it." Nico had a strange, hungry light in his eyes. "You can become invincible." "Maybe we should wait. Try to fight without..." "No," Nico snarled. "It has to be now." I stared at him. I hadn't seen his temper flare like that in a long time. You sure you're okay?" He took a deep breath. "Percy, all I mean, when the fighting starts, we won't be able to make the journey. This is our last chance. I'm sorry if I'm being too pushy, but 2 years ago, my sister gave her life to protect you. I want you to honor that. Do whatever it takes to stay alive and defeat Kronos." I didn't like the idea. Then I thought about Annabeth calling me a coward, and I got angry. Nico had a point. If Kronos attacked New York, the campers would be no match for his forces. I had to do something. Nico's way was dangerous, maybe even deadly, but it might give me a fighting edge. "All right," I decided. "What do we do first?" His cold, creepy smile made me sorry I'd agreed. "First, we'll need to retrace Luke's steps. We need to know more about his past, his childhood." I shuddered, thinking about Rachel's picture from my dream. A smiling 9-year-old Luke. "Why do we need to know about that?" "I'll explain when we get there," Nico said. "I've already tracked down his mother. She lives in Connecticut." I stared at him. I'd never thought much about Luke's mortal parent. I'd met his dad, Hermes, but his mom... "Luke ran away when he was really young," I said. "I didn't think his mom was alive." "Oh, she's alive." The way he said it made me wonder what was wrong with her. What kind of horrible person could she be? "Okay," I said. "So how do we get to Connecticut? I can call Blackjack." "No," Nico scowled. "Pegasi don't like me. And the feeling is mutual, but there's no need for flying." He whistled, and Mrs. O'Leary came loping out of the woods. "Your friend here can help." Nico patted her head. "You haven't tried shadow travel yet?"
"Shadow travel?"
Nico whispered in Mrs. O'Leary's ear. She tilted her head, suddenly alert. "Hop on board," Nico told me. I'd never considered riding a dog before, but Mrs. O'Leary was certainly big enough. I climbed onto her back and held her collar. "This will make her very tired," Nico warned, "so you can't do it often, and it works best at night, but all shadows are part of the same substance. There is only one darkness, and creatures of the underworld can use it as a road or a door." "I don't understand," I said.
"No," Nico said. "It took me a long time to learn, but Mrs. O'Leary knows. Tell her where to go. Tell her Westport, the home of May Castellan."
"You're not coming?"
"Don't worry," he said. "I'll meet you there."
I was a little nervous, but I leaned down to Mrs. O'Leary's ear.
"Okay, girl. Can you take me to Westport, Connecticut? May Castellan's place?"
Mrs. O'Leary sniffed the air. She looked into the gloom of the forest. Then she bounded forward, straight into an oak tree. Just before we hit, we passed into shadows as cold as the dark side of the moon. Chapter 6. My cookies get scorched.
I don't recommend shadow travel if you're scared of A, the dark, B, cold shivers up your spine, C, strange noises, D, going so fast you feel like your face is peeling off. In other words, I thought it was awesome. 1 minute, I couldn't see anything. I could only feel Mrs. O'Leary's fur and my fingers wrapped around the bronze links of her dog collar. The next minute, the shadows melted into a new scene. We were on a cliff in the woods of Connecticut. At least, it looked like Connecticut from the few times I'd been there. Lots of trees, low stone walls, big houses. Down one side of the cliff, a highway cut through a ravine. Down the other side was someone's backyard. The property was huge. More wilderness than lawn. The house was a two-story white colonial. Despite the fact that it was right on the other side of the hill from a highway, it felt like it was in the middle of nowhere. I could see a light glowing in the kitchen window. A rusty old swing set stood under an apple tree. I couldn't imagine living in a house like this, with an actual yard and everything. I'd lived in a tiny apartment or a school dorm my whole life. If this was Luke's home, I wondered why he'd ever wanted to leave. Mrs. O'Leary staggered. I remembered what Nico had said about shadow travel draining her, so I slipped off her back. She let out a huge, toothy yawn that would have scared a T-Rex, then turned in a circle and flopped down so hard the ground shook. Nico appeared right next to me, as if the shadows had darkened and created him. He stumbled, but I caught his arm. "I'm okay," he managed, rubbing his eyes. "How did you do that?" "Practice. A few times running into walls, a few accidental trips to China." Mrs. O'Leary started snoring. If it hadn't been for the roar of traffic behind us, I'm sure she would have woken up the whole neighborhood. "Are you going to take a nap too?" I asked Nico. He shook his head. "The first time I shadow traveled, I passed out for a week. Now it just makes me a little drowsy. But I can't do it more than once or twice a night. Mrs. O'Leary won't be going anywhere for a while." "So we've got some quality time in Connecticut." I gazed at the white colonial house. "What now?" "We ring the doorbell," Nico said. If I were Luke's mom, I would not have opened my door at night for two strange kids. But I wasn't anything like Luke's mom. I knew that even before we reached the front door. The sidewalk was lined with those little stuffed beanbag animals you see in gift shops. There were miniature lions, pigs, dragons, hydras, even a teeny minotaur in a little minotaur diaper. Judging from their sad shape, the beanbag creatures had been sitting out here a long time, since the snow melted last spring, at least. One of the hydras had a tree sapling sprouting between its necks. The front porch was infested with wind chimes. Shiny bits of glass and metal clinked in the breeze. Brass ribbons tinkled like water. It made me realize I needed to use the bathroom. I didn't know how Mrs. Castellan could stand all the noise. The front door was painted turquoise. The name Castellan was written in English, and below in Greek. Nico looked at me. "Ready?" He barely tapped the door when it swung open.
"Luke!"
the old lady cried happily. She looked like someone who enjoyed sticking her fingers in electrical sockets. Her white hair stuck out in tufts all over her head. Her pink house dress was covered in scorch marks and smears of ash. When she smiled, her face looked unnaturally stretched, and the high-voltage light in her eyes made me wonder if she was blind.
"Oh, my dear boy!"
She hugged Nico. I was trying to figure out why she thought Nico was Luke. They looked absolutely nothing alike. When she smiled at me and said,
"Luke!"
she forgot all about Nico and gave me a hug. She smelled like burnt cookies. She was as thin as a scarecrow, but that didn't stop her from almost crushing me.
"Come in," she insisted. "I have your lunch ready."
She ushered us inside. The living room was even weirder than the front lawn. Mirrors and candles filled every available space. I couldn't look anywhere without seeing my own reflection. Above the mantel, a little bronze Hermes flew around the second hand of a ticking clock. I tried to imagine the god of messengers ever falling in love with this old woman, but the idea was too bizarre. Then I noticed the framed picture on the mantel, and I froze. It was exactly like Rachel's sketch. Luke around 9 years old, with blonde hair and a big smile and two missing teeth. The lack of a scar on his face made him look like a different person, carefree and happy. How could Rachel have known about that picture?
"This way, my dear."
Mrs. Castellan steered me toward the back of the house.
"Oh, I told them you would come back. I knew it."
She sat us down at the kitchen table. Stacked on the counter were hundreds, and I mean hundreds, of Tupperware boxes with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches inside. The ones on the bottom were green and fuzzy, like they'd been there for a long time. The smell reminded me of my sixth grade locker, and that's not a good thing. On the top of the oven was a stack of cookie sheets. Each one had a dozen burned cookies on it. In the sink was a mountain of empty plastic Kool-Aid pitchers. A beanbag Medusa sat by the faucet like she was guarding the mess. Mrs. Castellan started humming as she got out peanut butter and jelly and started making a new sandwich. Something was burning in the oven. I got the feeling more cookies were on the way. Above the sink, taped all around the window, were dozens of little pictures cut from magazines and newspaper ads. Pictures of Hermes from the FTD Flowers logo and Quickie Cleaners. Pictures of the Caduceus from medical ads. My heart sank. I wanted to get out of that room, but Mrs. Castellan kept smiling at me as she made the sandwich, like she was making sure I didn't bolt. Nico coughed. Mrs. Castellan? We need to ask you about your son.
Oh, yes. They told me he would never come back, but I knew better.
She patted my cheek affectionately, giving me peanut butter racing stripes. When did you last see him? Nico asked. Her eyes lost focus.
He was so young when he left, she said wistfully. Third grade. That's too young to run away. He said he'd be back for lunch, and I waited. He likes peanut butter sandwiches and cookies and Kool-Aid. He'll be back for lunch very soon.
Then she looked at me and smiled.
Why, Luke, there you are. You look so handsome. You have your father's eyes.
She turned toward the pictures of Hermes above the sink.
Now there's a good man. Yes, indeed. He comes to visit me, you know.
The clock kept ticking in the other room. I wiped the peanut butter off my face and looked at Nico pleadingly, like, can we get out of here now?
Ma'am, Nico said, what happened to your eyes?
Her gaze seemed fractured, like she was trying to focus on him through a kaleidoscope.
Why, Luke, you know the story. It was right before you were born, wasn't it? I'd always been special, able to see through the... whatever they call it.
The mist? I said.
Yes, dear.
She nodded encouragingly.
And they offered me an important job. That's how special I was.
I glanced at Nico, but he looked as confused as I was.
What sort of job? I asked. What happened?
Mrs. Castellan frowned. Her knife hovered over the sandwich bread.
Dear me, it didn't work out, did it? Your father warned me not to try. He said it was too dangerous, but I had to. It was my destiny. And now, I still can't get the images out of my head. They make everything seem so fuzzy. Would you like some cookies?
She pulled a tray out of the oven and dumped a dozen lumps of chocolate chip charcoal on the table.
Luke was so kind, Mrs. Castellan murmured. He left to protect me, you know. He said if he went away, the monsters wouldn't threaten me. But I told him the monsters are no threat. They sit outside on the sidewalk all day, and they never come in.
She picked up the little stuffed Medusa from the windowsill.
Do they, Mrs. Medusa? No, no threat at all.
She beamed at me.
I'm so glad you came home. I knew you weren't ashamed of me.
I shifted in my seat. I imagined being Luke sitting at this table, 8 or 9 years old, and just beginning to realize that my mother wasn't all there. Mrs. Castellan, I said.
Mom,
she corrected. Yeah. Have you seen Luke since he left home?
Well, of course.
I didn't know if she was imagining that or not. For all I knew, every time the mailman came to the door, he was Luke. But Nico sat forward expectantly. When? He asked. When did Luke visit you last?
Well, it was... Oh, goodness.
A shadow passed across her face.
The last time... Oh, he looks so different. A scar, a terrible scar, and his voice so full of pain.
His eyes, I said, were they gold?
Gold?
She blinked.
No, how silly. Luke has blue eyes, beautiful blue eyes.
So Luke really had been here, and this had happened before last summer. Before he turned into Kronos. Mrs. Castellan? Nico put his hand on the old woman's arm. This is very important. Did he ask you for anything? She frowned as if trying to remember.
My blessing. Isn't that sweet?
She looked at us uncertainly.
He was going to a river, and he said he needed my blessing. I gave it to him. Of course I did.
Nico looked at me triumphantly.
Thank you, ma'am. That's all the information we...
Mrs. Castellan gasped. She doubled over, and her cookie tray clattered to the floor. Nico and I jumped to our feet. Mrs. Castellan? I said... She straightened. I scrambled away and almost fell over the kitchen table because her eyes were glowing green.
My child,
she rasped in a much deeper voice.
Must protect him. Hermes, help. Not my child. Not his fate. No.
She grabbed Nico by the shoulders and began to shake him as if to make him understand.
Not his fate.
Nico made a strangled scream and pushed her away. He gripped the hilt of his sword. Percy, we need to get out. Suddenly, Mrs. Castellan collapsed. I lurched forward and caught her before she could hit the edge of the table. I managed to get her into a chair. Mrs. C? I asked. She muttered something incomprehensible and shook her head.
Goodness, I dropped the cookies. How silly of me.
She blinked, and her eyes were back to normal, or at least what they had been before. The green glow was gone. Are you okay? I asked.
Well, of course, dear. I'm fine. Why do you ask?
I glanced at Nico, who mouthed the word, leave. Mrs. C, you were telling us something, I said. Something about your son.
Was I?
She said dreamily.
Yes, his blue eyes. We were talking about his blue eyes. Such a handsome boy.
We have to go, Nico said urgently. We'll tell Luke, we'll tell him you said hello.
But you can't leave.
Mrs. Castellan got shakily to her feet, and I backed away. I felt silly being scared of a frail old woman, but the way her voice had changed, the way she'd grabbed Nico...
Hermes will be here soon, she promised. He'll want to see his boy.
Maybe next time, I said. Thank you for... I looked down at the burned cookies scattered on the floor. Thanks for everything. She tried to stop us, to offer us Kool-Aid, but I had to get out of that house. On the front porch, she grabbed my wrist, and I almost jumped out of my skin.
Luke, at least be safe. Promise me you'll be safe.
I will, Mom. That made her smile. She released my wrist, and as she closed the front door, I could hear her talking to the candles.
You hear that? He will be safe. I told you he would be.
As the door shut, Nico and I ran. The little beanbag animals on the sidewalk seemed to grin at us as we passed. Back at the cliff, Mrs. O'Leary had found a friend. A cozy campfire crackled in a ring of stones. A girl about 8 years old was sitting cross-legged next to Mrs. O'Leary, scratching the hellhound's ears. The girl had mousy brown hair and a simple brown dress. She wore a scarf over her head, so she looked like a pioneer kid, like the ghost of Little House on the Prairie or something. She poked the fire with a stick, and it seemed to glow more richly red than a normal fire. Hello, she said. My first thought was, monster. When you're a demigod and you find a sweet little girl alone in the woods, that's typically a good time to draw your sword and attack. Plus, the encounter with Mrs. Castellan had rattled me pretty bad. But Nico bowed to the little girl. Hello again, lady. She studied me with eyes as red as the firelight. I decided it was safest to bow. Sit, Percy Jackson, she said. Would you like some dinner? After staring at moldy peanut butter sandwiches and burned cookies, I didn't have much of an appetite. But the girl waved her hand, and a picnic appeared at the edge of the fire. There were plates of roast beef, baked potatoes, buttered carrots, fresh bread, and a whole bunch of other foods I hadn't had in a long time. My stomach started to rumble. It was the kind of home-cooked meal people are supposed to have, but never do. The girl made a 5-foot-long dog biscuit appear for Mrs. O'Leary, who happily began tearing it to shreds. I sat next to Nico. We picked up our food, and I was about to dig in when I thought better of it. I scraped part of my meal into the flames, the way we do at camp. For the gods, I said. The little girl smiled. Thank you. As tender of the flame, I get a share of every sacrifice, you know. I recognize you now, I said. The first time I came to camp, you were sitting by the fire in the middle of the commons area. You did not stop to talk, the girl recalled sadly. Alas, most never do. Nico talked to me. He was the first in many years. Everyone rushes about. No time for visiting family. You're Hestia, I said. Goddess of the hearth. She nodded. Okay, so she looked 8 years old. I didn't ask. I'd learned that gods could look any way they pleased. My lady? Nico asked. Why aren't you with the other Olympians, fighting Typhon? I'm not much for fighting. Her red eyes flickered. I realized they weren't just reflecting the flames. They were filled with flames. But not like Ares' eyes. Hestia's eyes were warm and cozy. Besides, she said, someone has to keep the home fires burning while the other gods are away. So you're guarding Mount Olympus? I asked. Guard may be too strong a word, but if you ever need a warm place to sit and a home-cooked meal, you're welcome to visit.
Now eat.
My plate was empty before I knew it. Nico scarfed us down just as fast.
That was great, I said. Thank you, Hestia.
She nodded.
Did you have a good visit with May Castellan?
For a moment, I'd almost forgotten the old lady with her bright eyes and her maniacal smile, the way she'd suddenly seemed possessed.
What's wrong with her exactly? I asked.
She was born with a gift, Hestia said. She could see through the mist.
Like my mother, I said, and I was also thinking, like Rachel.
But the glowing eyes thing?
Some bear the curse of sight better than others, the goddess said sadly. For a while, May Castellan had many talents. She attracted the attention of Hermes himself. They had a beautiful baby boy. For a brief time, she was happy, and then she went too far.
I remembered what Mrs. Castellan had said. They offered me an important job. It didn't work out. I wondered what kind of job left you like that.
One minute she was all happy, I said, and then she was freaking out about her son's fate like she knew he'd turned into Kronos. What happened to divide her like that?
The goddess's face darkened.
That is a story I do not like to tell, but May Castellan saw too much. If you are to understand your enemy Luke, you must understand his family.
I thought about the sad little pictures of Hermes taped above May Castellan's sink. I wondered if Mrs. Castellan had been so crazy when Luke was little. That green-eyed fit could have seriously scared a 9-year-old kid. And if Hermes never visited, if he'd left Luke alone with his mom all those years?
No wonder Luke ran away, I said. I mean, it wasn't right to leave his mom like that, but still, he was just a kid. Hermes shouldn't have abandoned them.
Hestia scratched behind Mrs. O'Leary's ears. The hellhound wagged her tail and accidentally knocked over a tree.
It's easy to judge others, Hestia warned. But will you follow Luke's path? Seek the same powers?
Nico set down his plate. We have no choice, my lady. It's the only way Percy stands a chance.
Hestia opened her hand, and the fire roared. Flame shot 30 feet into the air. Heat slapped me in the face. Then the fire died back down to normal.
Not all powers are spectacular, Hestia looked at me. Sometimes the hardest power to master is the power of yielding. Do you believe me?
I said, anything to keep her from messing with her flame powers again.
The goddess smiled. You are a good hero, Percy Jackson. Not too proud, I like that. But you have much to learn. When Dionysus was made a god, I gave up my throne for him. It was the only way to avoid a civil war among the gods.
It unbalanced the council, I remembered. Suddenly there were 7 guys and 5 girls.
Hestia shrugged.
It was the best solution, not a perfect one. Now I tend the fire. I fade slowly into the background. No one will ever write epic poems about the deeds of Hestia. Most demigods don't even stop to talk to me. But that is no matter. I keep the peace. I yield when necessary. Can you do this?
I don't know what you mean.
She studied me. Perhaps not yet, but soon. Will you continue your quest?
Is that why you're here? To warn me against going?
Hestia shook her head. I am here because when all else fails, when all the other mighty gods have gone off to war, I am all that's left. Home. Hearth. I am the last Olympian. You must remember me when you face your final decision.
I didn't like the way she said final. I looked at Nico, then back at Hestia's warm, glowing eyes.
I have to continue, my lady. I have to stop Luke. I mean Kronos. Hestia nodded.
Very well. I cannot be of much assistance beyond what I have already told you. But since you sacrifice to me, I can return you to your own hearth. I will see you again, Percy, on Olympus.
Her tone was ominous, as though our next meeting would not be happy. The goddess waved her hand, and everything faded. Suddenly I was home. Nico and I were sitting on the couch in my mom's apartment on the Upper East Side. That was the good news. The bad news was that the rest of the living room was occupied by Mrs. O'Leary. I heard a muffled yell from the bedroom. Paul's voice said,
"Who put this wall of fur in the doorway?"
"Percy," my mom called out. "Are you here? Are you all right?"
"I'm here,"
I shouted back.
"Woof."
Mrs. O'Leary tried to turn in a circle to find my mom, knocking all the pictures off the walls. She's only met my mom once before. Long story. But she loves her. It took a few minutes, but we finally got things worked out. After destroying most of the furniture in the living room, and probably making our neighbors really mad, we got my parents out of the bedroom and into the kitchen, where we sat around the kitchen table. Mrs. O'Leary still took up the entire living room, but she'd settled her head in the kitchen doorway so she could see us, which made her happy. My mom tossed her a 10-pound family-sized tube of ground beef, which disappeared down her gullet. Paul poured lemonade for the rest of us while I explained about our visit to Connecticut.
"So it's true."
Paul stared at me like he'd never seen me before. He was wearing his white bathrobe, now covered in hellhound fur, and his salt and pepper hair was sticking up in every direction.
"All the talk about monsters and being a demigod, it's really true."
I nodded. Last fall, I'd explained to Paul who I was. My mom had backed me up, but until this moment, I don't think he really believed us. "Sorry about Mrs. O'Leary," I said, "destroying the living room and all." Paul laughed like he was delighted. "Are you kidding? This is awesome. I mean, when I saw the hoof prints on the Prius, I thought maybe. But this..." He patted Mrs. O'Leary's snout. The living room shook. Boom, boom, boom. Which either meant a SWAT team was breaking down the door, or Mrs. O'Leary was wagging her tail. I couldn't help but smile. Paul was a pretty cool guy, even if he was my English teacher as well as my stepdad. "Thanks for not freaking out," I said.
"Oh, I'm freaking out,"
he promised, his eyes wide.
"I just think it's awesome."
"Yeah, well," I said, "you may not be so excited when you hear what's happening." I told Paul and my mom about Typhon and the gods and the battle that was sure to come. Then I told them Nico's plan. My mom laced her fingers around her lemonade glass. She was wearing her old blue flannel bathrobe, and her hair was tied back. Recently she'd started writing a novel, like she'd wanted to do for years, and I could tell she'd been working on it late into the night because the circles under her eyes were darker than usual. Behind her at the kitchen window, silvery moon lace glowed in the flower box. I'd brought the magical plant back from Calypso's island last summer, and it bloomed like crazy under my mother's care. The scent always calmed me down, but it also made me sad because it reminded me of lost friends. My mom took a deep breath, like she was thinking how to tell me no.
"Percy, it's dangerous," she said, "even for you."
"Mom, I know. I could die. Nico explained that, but if we don't try..."
"We'll all die," Nico said.
He hadn't touched his lemonade. "Ms. Jackson, we don't stand a chance against an invasion, and there will be an invasion."
"An invasion of New York?" Paul said. "Is that even possible? How could we not see the monsters?"
He said the word like he still couldn't believe this was real.
I don't know, I admitted. I don't see how Kronos could just march in.